Okay, so the second parak of Megillas Esther is still what we would call background, the pre-story to the Megillah, in the sense that Haman is not yet on the scene. We are mindful of the fact that in Al-Nisim, when we tell the story, as we mentioned in the past, we start from Bimei Mordechai ve'Esther, Keshebike Shaman Arasha, Lahashmi La'arav Ga'abed. That's when the story begins, when Haman comes on the scene, everyone's there. Perek Aleph and also Perek Beis are yet before all of that. They're still background. And yet, as we know, the Halacha tells us, if a person read the entire Megillah, missed out a part of the beginning, he hasn't been Yotzei. And the reason is because if everyone is in the right place at the right time, so then when things happen, so everyone's where they needed to be. The hashgacha is to put everyone where they should be. How does Mordechai come to be exactly where he needs to be? How does Esther come to be the queen? If she's already the queen, you imagine she was always the queen and always had to be. Okay. So with this in mind, let's open Perek Beis. So what's out? This is Ahasuerus's very politically correct beauty contest. And he wants to get married. And he receives guidance from these Na'arim, Pasuk Beis, Vayemu Na'arim Melech, Mishar Sevi, Vakshula Melech, Na'aris, Besulos, Togos, Mara. So let them gather all these good-looking girls. V'yafkeda melech b'kidim b'chol medinas malchuso. And you should spread out and appoint people all of the states of your monarchy. V'yikvatu es kol nara v'sula tov asmara el shushan abira el beis hanashim. And bring all of those girls to shushan abira. El yad hege sris ha-melech shom ha-hanashim v'nason tamru kehem. To give them all to under the care of Haggai, give them their cosmetics. V'hanara pasuk dalad asher tita be'enei ha-melech timnoch tachas v'ashti. And the one that you like the most, so she'll be the queen instead of Vashti. Vayita v'adavar be'enei ha-melech v'yaskein. Achashverosh thought this was a good idea. He liked it, and so he did. The shaila is, what does Achashverosh want? He wants to get married. How difficult is it for Ahasuerus to get married? I mean, he's the king of the world. If he wants to get married, let them find a wife for him. This plan is so elaborate. It involves so much organization and also involves so much time. First of all, the time that it involves to get everyone together. I mean, it's an international thing. I mean, travel being what it is, it could be weeks or months before everyone has been vetted. And then it takes a year for the girl to get ready, as we'll see from later on in the psukim. Shisha chadashim b'shem benamar, shisha chadashim b'besomim. That's a year before he even meets the first one, after months of getting everyone together. And then he's got to meet them all, right? One a day, which is more months. I mean, he wants to get married. I mean, this is prolonging his bachelorhood for at least 2 years. Like, is it so complicated? But Ahasuerus likes it. We should note, by the way, that according to the Yosef Lekach, and of course we'll be guided again by the great Rabbi Yosef Lekach, Rabbi Elezer Ashkenazi, that when it says that they were gathering girls from all of these Medinos, it doesn't necessarily mean that every single good-looking girl from all of the Medinos. So imagine if there were 100 in every Medina, 127 Medinos. I mean, that's Ahasuerus will die of old age before he's met all of them. It could be that in every Medina they will choose, within that Medina, get all the girls together, and then the one who's most beautiful from that Medina will then come. So at the end there will be 127 candidates. There will be Miss Hodu and Miss Kush, and they all come together, but that's still 127, that's still 3 months Okay, but Achashverosh likes the idea. I mean, what's to like? He's postponed. He's not going to be married for months, maybe years. Another very interesting question from the macro, shall we say, to the micro. They say in the end of Perik, Pasuk Gimel describes the plan. Let them gather together, set up these officers. It's called Nara Basula, Tovas Mara, El Shushan Abira, El Beis Hanashim. Get all these girls together. Oyad Hege Sris Hamelech Shemer Hanashim, V'nason Tamru Kehem. Those final words, V'nason Tamru Kehem, are very interesting because they seem to be so unimportant in terms of what you're discussing. V'nason Tamru Kehem means give them cosmetics. Why give them cosmetics? Because then they'll look nicer. That may be true, but there's probably lots of other things that they'll need. I mean, these are logistical things. You've gone from the grand plan to like a footnote in the plan. So these advisors are saying, you know, you should get all these girls together, and they'll probably need tissues. And so that's what it sounds like that's such a minor thing. Cosmetics, but yeah, if yes, then yes, but why is that mentioned now? They'll also need food, they'll also need lodgings, I mean, they'll need plenty of things. That's an interesting shaila. So Yosef Lekach brings us back to the first pasuk. What does it say? Achar advarim ha'ele, k'shoch chamas ha'melech ha'chashverosh. After his anger debated, zachares vashti ve'es asher asasa ve'es asher nigzar aleha. So what does the pasuk seem to say? That he remembers Vashti and he missed her and, well, that's too late and now he wants to get married. Except the pasuk seems to break up the Vashti into three phrases. He remembers Vashti. He remembers what she did. He remembers that which was decreed against her. I mean, the truth is that all of that really is part of Vashti. It's hardly likely, in fact impossible, that he could remember Vashti and not remember what she did and not remember what was decreed against her. Like, where is she? So that's all really with Vashti. So why does the pasuk split it up into three? Yosef Lekach explains that this is the background to the situation. Achashverosh, he wants to get married, yes. But he has a problem. The problem is that he wants to be as sure as he can that what happened with Vashti will never happen again. Because he remembers Vashti, yes. He remembers what she did, which was a disaster for him, especially as he was looking to establish himself as being in control, and she defied him, and Esa Shenigzar Leah, which was, the whole thing ended in a very sour note. But that's already a precedent. And Achashverosh, as we know, is paranoid about his power. How can he ensure that this won't happen again? And this is the background to the very elaborate plan of his advisors, where they say, firstly, he's not to consult normally who does a king want to marry. He'll want to marry the daughter of another king, or no, none of that. They don't want any blue blood in the equation here. No one should have any airs and graces, no one from the higher echelons of society. Rather, they should just get together all of these girls, and the point is, they'll be with each other. And let's take the lowest number, 127 of them. Each of these girls lives for a year with 126 competitors. That means that they're stewing together for all of those months, and everyone is keenly aware that there's many, many others who may be chosen over her, and basically their confidence has a year to be worn away. And moreover, the 126, when Achashverosh is finished with them, they don't go home. They go back to the harem, which means that whoever is chosen, not only will she'll be forever thanking Achashverosh that he was the one that chose her out of everyone else, there's 126 girls who are waiting to take her place if she misbehaves. So it's about establishing subservience. That's what Achashverosh needs. There'll be no uppity behavior from the new queen. Another point. Vashti's defiance began. Actually, she did not defy Ahasuerus directly. He never spoke to her directly. On that day, that fateful day, on 7 of the party, when he called for her, he sent Sarissim. And obviously Vashti felt much more comfortable defying the Sarissim, even though they're being sent by Ahasuerus. Here, the plan is to further embed subservience within her, even in terms of the king's servants. How can that be done? The answer, say the advisors, is Vinason Tamrukehem. Their cosmetics will be given to them. Meaning, cosmetics are a girl's best friend. She wants to be the next queen. They'll make her look her best. No one brings their own cosmetics. Cosmetics are given. But who are they given by? Saris HaMelech. They're given by the servant of the king. For good behavior. That means that every girl knows if she doesn't toe the line, she doesn't obey, even the Sarissim, so then her chances of ever getting out of there are nil. And therefore it's establishing a kind of a dependency on even the Sarissim, so then she knows to behave. These are not very pleasant ideas. But this is what will ensure that by the time she's out, she won't dare, she'll be conditioned not to disobey even one of the king's servants. Another thing, according to the Yosef Lekach, is they say in Pasuk Dalet Vahanara Asher Titav Be'enei HaMelech, Timloch Tachas Vashti. Timloch Tachas Vashti. She will rule. Tachas Vashti can mean instead of Vashti, but they're suggesting something else. Tachas Vashti means lower than Vashti, as if to say that by the time you choose your wife, she shouldn't even become the queen. That she should never even see herself as being an equal to you. She should be Mrs. King, Mrs. Ahasuerus, but not the queen. And that's why there's no reference of crowning her. Tachas Vashti means make sure that she's just that one niche lower than Vashti. Ahasuerus likes this idea very much. It will take a long time, but for him, it is a good investment. He doesn't want another Vashti debacle. And that's the plan. And why does the Torah, or why does the Megillah, that is to say, tell us this plan in such great detail? It is in order to appreciate the miracle of Purim, this segment of the Hashgacha, because as we will see with all of that planning, what ended up happening was the exact opposite of everything that was meant to happen, as we will see. This brings us to Pasuk Hey, as we introduce the second the first of the principal personalities for us, and that's Mordechai. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBira. So there was a Jew, Ish Yehudi, who was in Shushan, Ushmo Mordechai ben Yoi ben Shimi ben Kish Ishimini. And this, as we know, is one of the psukim that we say out loud, right, in the Bitzibur. And it's interesting that the Pasuk seems to present this as a Chiddush. There was a Jew in Shushan HaBira. Is it a Chiddush? Reb Reuven Margolius, in the Sefer HaMikra VaMesora, points out something very interesting. The city Shushan, which is referred to many, many times throughout Megillas Esther, is sometimes referred to as the city Shushan, Ha'ir Shushan, and other times is referred to as Shushan HaBira, the capital city. Now, the truth is, it was both. It was a city, and it was a capital city. Every country has a capital city. But the reference seems to shift. Sometimes it's referred to as Ha'ir Shushan, sometimes it's referred to as Shushan HaBira, although even though it's the same place. And sometimes we find that the reference shifts even within one pasuk. At the end of Perek Gimel, the final pasuk of Perek Gimel, which is when the decree has gone out already, the pasuk says, pasuk tesvav haratzim yatzuv tuchufim b'dvar amelech. So the runners went out in a hurry with the king's decree. V'hadas nitna b'shushan abira, and the rule was issued b'shushan abira. V'amelech v'aman yashvu lishtos v'ha'ir Shushan navocha. The city Shushan was in confusion. That's very interesting, because the same place is referred to twice within the same pasuk, And the first time it's referred to as Shushan Abira, the second time as Ha'ir Shushan. So Rabbi Rufa Margolius says, he had an idea that he was considering for a while, and then he was supported by certain founds that were made. Excavations were conducted around the area that they felt was the place of Shushan and Ahasuerus's palace, and they dug. And what they found was the palace was within a kind of a palace city, a kind of a citadel city, which was surrounded by a wall and a moat, and then there was the outlying area, which was yet part of Shushan, as if to say that the capital part of Shushan was a city within a city. And it had its own wall and its own moat. And Rabbi Rufa Margolius says, it seems that this is the difference. This is what the Megillah is talking about the whole time. There is the Ir Shushan, which is greater Shushan, and there's Shushan Habira, which is the capital part of Shushan. Very interesting. And that is why, for example, if we go back to the end of Perek Gimel, where we see the two references, where on the one hand it says Vahadas Nitna Bishushan Abira, because the Das, the law, was issued in the capital city, in the royal part, in Shushan Abira. But as word went out and people didn't really know what was going on, Ha'ir Shushan Navochar, and Shushan as a whole was confused. There was no confusion in Shushan Abira. People knew exactly what was happening. Moreover, says Rabbi Rufa Margolius, it's possible that this has been highlighted by the Gemara itself, and on the contrary, this idea will help us explain the Gemara. In Perek Dalet, where Mordechai is causing a fuss, and he's wailing and crying, and Esther wants to find out what's going on, and he tells her what happened with Mordechai, and so Esther says, Go and tell everyone to fast for me. Uvechein avo al melech. The final pasuk of Perek Dalet reads, pasuk Yudzayin, Vayavor Mordechai. Vayas kechol asher tzivsa alav Esther. Vayavor Mordechai literally means, Vayavor, he passed over. Vayavor. It doesn't say Vayelech or Vayetze. Vayavor. Now, what exactly did he pass over? Doesn't say. The Gemara says in Megillah Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph, She'ovar Arkama Demaya. He passed over a stream of water, a body of water. Since when is there a body of water in the middle of Shushan? Says Rabbi Rufa Margolius, we can understand very well now. Until this point, he's been talking with Esther. He came Ad Shar Lefnei Shar HaMelech. That means that he is currently in Shushan Habira. But then she says, go and tell the people in Shushan to fast for me. That means he's got to go from Shushan Abira to Shushan. And separating between them is Arkama Demaya. That's the moat that separated the royal city from the broader city. That's now illuminated by the Gemara itself. Now, Rabbi Rufa Margolius wants to use this idea to say that this now is the Chiddush of Ishu Di Hayab Shushan Habira, as if to say, Shushan was full of Jews. Ha'ir Shushan, that's not a Chiddush. But to be in Shushan Habira, right, that inner circle, that was actually quite a Chiddush. Ishu Di Hayab Shushan Habira. I might mention that there are a couple of questions that are generated by this final point of Rabbi Rufa Margolius. It was a Chiddush to have an Ishu Di inside Shushan Habira. Shushan itself is full of Jews. But Shushan Abira, maybe only, if there was one, it was a speaking point. I have a couple of questions with regards to this. Firstly, the Gemara tells us that one of the contributing factors for the decree against the Jewish people is that they went to Achashverosh's feast, Shenenu Mesudas Achashverosh. Now the feast in question is the second feast, the one which was 7 days long, and there the pasuk says, "Uvimlos hayamim ha'ele," so the king made a feast, "L'cholam hanimseim bishushan habira," for everyone who lived in Shushan Habira. Now, according to Reuven Margolis, Shushan Abir is that smaller city. And if we're going to say that it's a chiddush that there was even one Jew there, and he's the only Jew that we know didn't go to the feast, so how many Jews were there who went that would actually incur such a decree on the Jewish people as a whole? There seems to be a marginal representation. That's the first question. The second question is that later on in the Megillah, when the war happens and the Jews defend themselves, Sipposit tells us that they killed in Shushan HaBira 500 men. Now the war was defensive in nature, as the Pasuk says, Nikalu va'amod al nafsha. They were allowed to bear arms and defend themselves. But if none of them were actually inside Shushan HaBira, then how could they defend themselves and kill 500 people inside Shushan HaBira? It seems from these two questions, if we may part ways just on this final point with Reuven Margolis, that as much as there was an inner city, it doesn't mean it was such a rare thing for Jews to be there. But nonetheless, the ikkar for us is the that distinction which really gives us great insight into all of these shifts between Shushan and Shushan HaBira. And so, Pasuk Vav tells us of his relationship with Esther. Pardon me, Pasuk Zion. Vayhi omeinas Hadassah. He was a guardian for Hadassah. He Esther Bastodah. She is Esther, his cousin. Ke'en la avaim, because she was orphaned. And Mordechai took her in and brought her up. The Pasuk refers to her as Hadassah, he Esther, which means that she has two names. The Gemara actually says in Maseches Megillah that her name is really Hadassah. That was her original name is Hadassah. The Megillah calls her Esther, and it calls her Esther for possibly for Megillah reasons. Either, says the Gemara, she's called Esther because shehistira devareha, because she hid her identity, and therefore this became her Megillah name. Or, interestingly, says the Gemara, second explanation, she's called Esther al shem istahar. Istahar is the Aramaic for the moon. Rashi explains, Yofa Kalavona, beautiful like the moon. So that's why she's called Esther. But it's interesting that the way the Pasuk is presenting her to us, Hadassah, he Esther, essentially is saying that her original name was Hadassah, and she will henceforth be known as Esther. Which she is for the rest of the... she's not going to be called Hadassah again in the Megillah. And it's interesting just to note a parallel between this and the way that the Megillah refers to all the dates, that specifically the months. Every month in the Megillah is referred to by its number and then a name. B'chodesh Neimasar, B'chodesh Adar, B'chodesh HaRishon, B'chodesh Nisan, etc. and so forth. There's also Tevis and this Sivan. And what's behind this double identification? So the Ramban actually in Parshas Bo explains that what's happening is that these names of Nisan and Adar, these were names that were now coming in. They're actually Babylonian names that they brought back with them from Babel. Until this point, months had no names. They were only called Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni. And that's because of the pasuk that Nisan, what we call Nisan, HaChodesh HaZelechem Rosh Chodashim, that should be the first month. So the 12 months of the year were only ever called by numbers, numbering back to the time we came out of Mitzrayim. Much similar to the way that in Hebrew they refer to the days of the week. They don't have names, they just have numbers. Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. There was HaChodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni. There was a transition from referring to the months by number as to by name, and that actually took place when the Megillah was being written. It was one of the Chidushim, because the Megillah is towards the end of that exile as they're going back, and that's when they began to adopt these names. And that's why it gives a new insight into what it means to refer to the months that way, because Chodesh Neimasar or Chodesh Adar, says Rambam, is the Megillah's way of saying what you know as the 12th month, which will from this point onwards begin to be known as Adar. And so too with the third month Sivan, the 10th month Teves, and that's actually something similar which is happening with Esther. Hadassah y Esther. You know her as Hadassah, that's how she was originally called. And she will from this point on be known as Esther for one of those reasons. Now, in Pasuk Ches, we find everyone is now organized and gathered together. When the king's word and decree is heard, everyone is brought together. And Esther is taken as well. Says Yosef Lekach, this pasuk needs to be read very carefully, because we will see that all those other girls were brought there and Esther was brought there, but they're not brought in the same way. And we can see that the pasuk doesn't use the same verb to describe it. With all of the other girls, the pasuk says, "Vihikavets narosavos." Vihikavets means gather together, because any girl who could possibly make it was clamoring to get in. They're crowding around. Esther, batilakach Esther. Esther was taken. The Gemara tells us Esther actually was heading in the other direction from everyone else. They're all heading towards the competition. Esther's running away or hiding, or whatever it is, but she was found and she was taken. But that's a very different atmosphere now with Esther as opposed to everyone else. And in fact, as we've mentioned on many occasions, the Vilna Gaon tells us that the Tamei HaMikra are a form of commentary, not only the way to sing the pasuk, but also they give us further understanding of the pasuk. If we have a look in pasuk Yud Beis, as it talks about each girl, Uvagia Tor Nara V'Nara Lavo LaMelech HaChashveirosh. So if you have a look at the words Nara V'Nara, each and every girl, so the Tamei HaMikra there, those two crescents facing each other, known as Kadma V'Azla. Kadma V'Azla means going forward first, because that was the atmosphere amongst these girls. Each one wanted to be first, Nara V'Nara. Each one wanted to be Kadma V'Azla. Contrast that with Esther, says the Gaon, who's referred to in Pasuk Tesvav. Uvahagia, Tor Esther, Bas Avichael, Dod, Mordechai. You have one time, it's repeated itself four times, which is called a munach. And munach means holding back, because she wants to be at the back. Everyone else is Kadma V'Azla, wants to be first, and Esther wants to be just left behind, left to the side. And this is very important for us to know, that Esther was hiding, and she was taken, and she was reluctant, because this is the most direct reason for the fact that Esther does not divulge her identity, which we know is true. Lo higida Esther pasuk, lo higida Esther tamav es ben atashi. She doesn't say what nation she's from, whereabouts she's from. Mordechai said she can't say. Why can't she say? It's not just to be mysterious. It's not just because it's not relevant information. It's pikuach nefesh. It's known that Esther wanted to avoid being taken to be Achashverosh's wife, and no one knows why. Now, as long as people are guessing as to what the reason is, so Esther is safe, because it's kind of mysterious and who knows. But if it becomes discovered that she's Jewish, then that's not mysterious anymore. That's racism. that's an act against the king. She doesn't, because she's Jewish, she doesn't want to be married to Achashverosh. There could be backlash for her and for where she's from, and maybe even her entire people. And therefore, it could be sakonas nefashos for Esther to say at this moment that she's Jewish. And that's why, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, we have an interesting situation. Uvechol yom v'yom, each and every day, Mordechai mishalech lifnei chatzar beis hanashim. He goes in front of the courtyard where all the women are. Ladas is shalom Esther, umaya aseh, but to see, well, how is Esther doing? Without this background, we would think that Mordechai, he wants to know how she's faring. He doesn't want to know how she's faring. He wants to know if she's still okay. Maybe she's in danger. Maybe they found out that she's Jewish, and maybe she's in trouble. And therefore Mordechai, interestingly, he has to kind of keep an eye out for her safety, but he can't be actually something that gets her into trouble. And that's why the pasuk says, Mordechai mishalech. He can never really go and ask how she's doing, because why is Mordechai inquiring about her? Too much of Mordechai inquiring, and Mordechai, of course, is very noticeably Jewish. So that itself, he wants to see how is she doing in terms of not telling people that she's Jewish, and he asks so many times that people realize that she's Jewish, because Mordechai has taken such an interest in her. And therefore he never asked, and he never even directly goes to the Beis Hanoshim, which is obviously, under normal circumstances, a highly inappropriate place for Mordechai to be. But rather, mishalech lifnei Beis Hanoshim. He kind of takes himself for a walk, over here, over there. He's looking to pick up information. Ladaz shalom esther. Will he overhear something? Will they be talking about the girl who they found out she was Jewish and now she's in trouble? Just to find out. Okay. Now, Esther, however, was okay. Everyone that she met fell under her spell. We should note, the Gemara actually says that, although it's a machlevkus in the Gemara, the Pasuk says, that's what the Pasuk says in Pasuk Zion, that she was very beautiful. There is an opinion, however, in the Gemara, which says, Esther Yirakrokes Haisa. Esther, well, the way it's normally translated, Yarok is green, Esther was green, that's a mistranslation of the Gemara, because the Chazal will use the word Yarok not to mean green. Yarok for Chazal means yellow. That's what you find in the Gemara in Shabbos when it talks about having the bris on time, it talks about whether the baby is Yarok, right? Babies are not green. If they are, then the bris is the least of our worries. It's about jaundice. It's about the baby being yellow. Yarok. Yarok kakarti leek yarok. That's called green. But stam yarok in the Gemara is actually yellow. And therefore, the Gemara says that Esther had a kind of a yellowish complexion, which wasn't really that very attractive. Except, as the Gemara, although she wasn't naturally attractive, chut shel chesed mashuch aleha, there was some type of grace that she had, and people were kind of fell in love with her regardless. Now the Vilna Gaon states, important to note, I don't know if it's the simple reading of the Gemara, but the Vilna Gaon says that when someone says in the Gemara that Esther Yirakrokes Haisa, that she was yellow, it doesn't mean that was her natural complexion. Now if the Pasuk says she was Yifas Torah, but Tovas Mareh, rather when someone says in the Gemara that she was Yirakrokes, it means at this time she was Yirakrokes, or by this time she was Yirakrokes, as if to say, after everything that she'd been through, all the trauma of hiding and then being caught and being held against her will, and the whole distress of the situation, it took its toll on her complexion, and she ended up looking Yirakrokes, but even so, Chutzah Chesed. But that was an anomaly even for Esther, so says the Gaon. But others understand that the Gemara means to say it as a comment on Esther generally, nonetheless, chut shel chesed nimshach aleha. Now, this brings us to a very important point. And that is that we see that this very important part of the story, that Esther was running away, and she was caught, and she didn't want to be there, and the Pasuk doesn't really talk about it. You have to see it. You have to read carefully. You have to be able to discern between Uvihi Kavetz of the other girls and Vatila Kachester. It's there if you're looking, but it could have been more explicit. Says Yosef Lekach, no. It could not be more explicit. And the reason why is because we need to remind ourselves. The miracle of Purim is that Achashverosh had given Haman license to destroy the Jewish people, and they would not be allowed to defend themselves. The miracle is that Achashverosh turned against Haman, sided again with the Jews, and we survived. The miracle of Purim is about survival. It's not redemption in the ultimate sense of the word. And this the Gemara says, because by the time the miracle of Purim were finished, where were we? We're still under Achashverosh's dominion. We weren't free from him. We were just not scheduled for extermination. And in fact, this is one of the famous three reasons mentioned in the Gemara and Megillah and Daf Yud Daled as to why we don't say Halal on Purim. After all, Purim, it's a special time. Miracle happens. A Hallel is not appropriate. Why not? And the Gemara gives three answers, and one of them is from Rava, because Hallel begins, Hallelu Avdei Hashem. Praise all of you who are servants of Hashem. Says Rava, that can only be done if you're delivered to the extent that you're servants of no one else other than Hashem. But after the story of Purim, Akate Avdei Achashverosh Hanan, we're Achashverosh's servants, and therefore, and that's important to realize, because it will have ramifications for how the Megillah needs to be written. Because when the Megillah is written and it is read, it will be read by Achashverosh. And if there's anything in the Megillah that will agitate Achashverosh, it threatens to undo the entire miracle of Purim. So he was together with Haman, and they managed to prevail to turn against Haman. And then they wrote a story which celebrates their deliverance and tells all about how Esther never really wanted to be with Ahasuerus, and she was running away as fast as she could and hiding from him. And that's not going to bring out the best reaction in Ahasuerus. That could bring about a reversal. Very interesting. Indeed, we know according to the Gemara, there's one opinion that Esther was more than a cousin to Mordechai. Esther was married to Mordechai. It's darshan from a pasuk, lekachal lo Mordechai levas, as a daughter. The Gemara darshans al tikri levas ela lebayis. She was his house. She was his wife, at least at one time. That's a drosha. Is that not relevant information? Says Yosef Lekach. That's the sort of thing that Achashverosh doesn't want to know about. As far as he's concerned, Esther was never married, and Mordechai, his new deputy, to find out that she was once married to Mordechai, that's left for a drosha. And in fact, not only does the Megillah therefore hide things or embed things that are relevant to Esther, it does so similarly with regards to Achashverosh. As far as the Gemara is concerned, Achashverosh was just as bad as Haman in his own way. The Gemara gives a mashal when Haman comes with his plan to destroy the Jewish people. And how could Achashverosh be duped into it? Like, he doesn't know. It gives a mashal of someone who has a mound of dirt in his courtyard. He's looking for someone to take care of it. Where's he going to put it? He talks to his friend, and his friend happens to have an enormous pit in his back. He's looking for something to put into it. So they both solved each other's problems. Each one did each other a favor. This one filled the other one's pit, and this one took care of the other one's dirt. And that's how they looked at the Jewish people. When Achashverosh heard of this idea, Haman was doing him a favor. Now, you won't find that in the Megillah. According to Rashi, that's the first Rashi in Megillas Esther. Vayi b'mei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, says Rashi, who berishalo mitchilasa vatzofa. He's Achashverosh, he's a rusher from beginning to end. But why leave it for Rashi? Once again, because the Megillas Esther is written under the auspices of Achashverosh, so he can't read it and find out what a rusher he is. One thing we can be sure, when they presented him with a leather-bound copy of Megillas Esther, it was without Rashi's commentary. Which means that when he read the words, Vayi b'mei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, That's a good story. It's got one of his favorite people in it. It's mentioned twice already in the first pasuk. So it's a very interesting thing to be aware of as we go through Megillas Esther to understand the circumstances under which it was written, which means that there's a lot which is hidden inside Megillas Esther because Achashverosh is one of the readers. Very interesting. Now, what happens with Esther? Let's have a look at Pasuk Tes. So she is brought to Haggai. He is the one in charge of the girls. Pasuk Tes, Vatitav hanara be'enav, Vatisa chesed lefan. And she found favor with him, and Vayivahel estamrukeha ve'smanuseha Losesla. Vayivahel. The word Vayivahel is from the word Behala, Vayavhilu. That means that he hurried her. He expedited her. He put her on an express track Vayivahel, to get her ready. Why would he do that? Because she found favor in his eyes. Basically, Hagar took one look at Esther and realized and concluded she's the one. She's the one for Achashverosh. And therefore, he felt that there's no point in wasting everyone's time. And although she came in last, he pushed her to the front. Now, I'm not sure if Haggai was in on the original discussion, but essentially what is beginning to happen now is the unraveling of the entire plan. The whole point of getting the girls together is that everyone should be uncertain and should have no confidence and be fearful the whole time. There's so many others, and maybe it could be them, and who says it's going to be her? They've got to stew together for a year. And in comes Esther, and Hagar looks at her and says, "You're going to win! Let's make you first!" So the whole organization, which was there in order to undermine her confidence, ended up just giving her confidence. And moreover, the pasuk goes on to say, it begins by Yivahelis Tamrukeh Ves Monoseh Losisla. All of her cosmetics, he gives them the fast track. The Esheva Hanaoros Haruuyos Losisla Mibes HaMelech. And the seven girls that are fitting to come from the palace. There's no reference to that earlier in the Perek. And is it true? Every single girl gets seven girls from the palace? Says the Yosef Lekach. No, none of them do. Why should they get girls from the palace? But he gave them to her because he already knows that she's going to be the queen. He starts treating her like a queen even when she's still ostensibly one of the contestants. He's already arranging for her. And indeed, as Malbin points out, because he was so sure that she would win, he wants to be the first to have given her good treatment so that she'll remember Haggai when it happens. He knows that it's going to be her. And therefore, we can already see all of these weeks and months of getting everyone together in order to condition the winner to obedience, etc., and so forth. That just completely fell apart. And Esther comes in, and Hagar said, "You're definitely going to win. Let's just stop wasting time with all of these other girls and get you to where you need to be." Okay. The same thing happens when she meets Achashverosh. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayehav HaMelech es Esther mikol anoshim. He meets Esther. Now we know the protocols, that he meets one girl every night, and now he meets Esther. Vatizachen v'chesed lefanu mikol ha-besulos, so she likes her more than anyone else. Vayosim keser malchus berosha v'yamlichea tachas vashti. Achashverosh looks at Esther, and she's the one. He puts the crown on her head, and she's the queen. And this was the opposite of everything that everyone has been planning for. The whole point is, she's meant to come to him, then she's meant to go. Ba'erev hi ba'a, uba'boka hi shava. She's got to go back. She's got to have that uncertainty. Don't call us, we'll call you. We probably won't call you. She's got to have that feeling of the aftermath of meeting Achashverosh, so then she'll be forever grateful when he recalls her. And lo and behold, Achashverosh doesn't even send her back. He just takes the crown, and of all things, the device, don't take the crown. She shouldn't be Tamichea Tachas Vashti. He just looks at her and says, "You are the new queen." And with that, all of the international organization flew out the window, and half of its organizers probably flung themselves out afterwards. And this is why, says Yosef Lekach, we read this perek of the Megillah. Just to have a sense, if we just came in, b'mei Mordechai v'Esther, Esther's the queen, to realize just how many forces had to be overturned, and how many odds had to be defied in order for Esther to become the queen. When we appreciate that, that's the hashgacha, that's the flow of the story as it all comes together. Now, Esther's the queen. That is quick as that. And now, Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayas HaMelech Mishte Godol L'chol Sarav Avadav Eis Mishte Esther. So Pasuk Yud Ches describes three things. He made a great feast, and Vanochel Amadinos Asar, he gave dispensations to various states, all states really, in her honor, by Etein Masis Ki Yad HaMelech, and he gave royal gifts as befits the king. What is the role of these three things that Achashverosh is doing? So Malbim, who is one of those who takes his cue and bases his commentary on the Yosef Lekach, explains that these are Achashverosh's ways of trying to get Esther to reveal who she is, because she's not saying. The first thing he does, Vayas HaMelech Mishte Godol Choser Avadav, he makes a party for all of his officers. And Eis Mishte Esther is the party of Esther. His hope is that with so many people talking to her, and so many people inquiring after her, and she's the center of attraction for the entire evening, somehow it will come out. There could only be so many people asking, so where do you come from, before she just, her resolve fades. And she says where she's from. That was his first idea. Put her in the spotlight, and she'll begin to talk. Secondly, the Hanocha Lamedinos Asa, he begins to give these dispensations to all of the areas. And this is the point where perhaps his wife, Esther, now is community-minded, she may see it as being a good thing for her to say where she's from, because as the king is being generous to all places, but the place that she is from, perhaps he'll be more generous. Until now, it's just been between him and her. She has no background, and therefore it's up to her whether she says or not. And if she doesn't say, no harm done, so far. But once Achashverosh begins to perform acts of kindness on her behalf, or generated by her, so that may be an incentive for her, that if she tells him where she's from, he will be more kind and bestow more favors on where she is from. That's his goal, to provide an incentive. And finally, in a very similar manner, Vayitein Maseis Ki Yad HaMelech, and he gives that dispenser's gifts. Again, the message for Esther will be, you know there'll be plenty of more where this is coming from, if only I found out where you were from, your family and your surroundings and your hometown and maybe even your people. That's what these ploys of Pasuk Yud Ches are about. Moreover, Uvi Kaveit Besulo Shenes, as the girls came back together, which according to the Gemara means that he tried to pressure her by perhaps giving her to think that maybe it could be reversed, and maybe there would be a rerun of the competition. Esther's not saying. Pasuk Kaf, Ein Esther Magedus Melalotov Esama. She doesn't say where she's from, what's her nation, Kasher Tziva Leah Mordechai, just like Mordechai said. The Vilna Gaon explains that, in a sense, I mean, this pasuk has been stated earlier in the Perek. Pasuk Yud Lo Higida Esther Samos Vemalata, and now it's stated again. Pasuk Kaf. What changes? Why is it repeated? So the Gaon explains that, in a sense, it's a different pasuk now the second time round, because initially we can well understand why Esther wouldn't say it, for reasons that we saw. She was running away. It could be an act of defiance against the king. There could be backlash against all of her people. It made perfect sense for her not to say where she's from. At this stage, 10 psukim later, which is, she's already the queen, everyone's safe, she has the king's favor, and she's still not saying. And this is a point where it becomes less intuitive for her not to say. It would seem to be, maybe the time is right. No one's in danger. And still she doesn't say. It's a new pasuk now. It's a new dynamic, and that is Ein Esther Magedes Melalotov Esama Kasher Tziveh Olam Mordechai, because Mordechai told her not to say, and Mordechai hasn't yet said that it's time to say. And this is a point where intuition and Mordechai's advice part ways, because intuition would say the time is right. It's a good climate. Say now. But Esther says that may well be. It may make perfect sense to me. That would be a good idea to tell Achashverosh where I'm from. But Mordechai hasn't given the word yet. Mordechai said no, and therefore Esther suspends her judgment, really, of whether it's a good idea in deference to Mordechai, because Mordechai is, he's Mordechai, he's the head of the Sanhedrin, and he has deeper insight into these things. He's the Zaken Ador. And that becomes critical, of course, when so much later the right time presents itself in a way that couldn't have been envisaged now, that it would be worth waiting for that time. That's the direction that Esther gets from Mordechai. And so Esther is queen. The final piece of Hashgacha setup comes at the end of Perek Beis, where we have Bigtan and Teresh, Bayamim Ahem, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Mordechai Yoshev Bishar Melech, Katsaf, Bigtan and Teresh, Shnei Sarisei Amelech, Meshomrei Asaf. So Bigtan and Teresh, they try and kill Ahasuerus, which, by the way, as the Malbim points out, very interestingly, is a chiddush. It's not the first time that someone tried to assassinate a monarch, but it's very rare for two of his stewards to do so. They're Meshomrei Asaf. I mean, there is guards, in the sense that normally the one who tries to kill the king is someone who thinks that he will be king next. That could be one of his close aides or something like that, who could step into his position. But to kill the king, and the maximum it seems you have to hope for is that you're going to be holding a cup for another king. So it takes a very high degree of motivation to still want to kill the king. The risk versus reward doesn't seem to be that commensurate. But they do. And Mordechai finds out about it, as the Gemara tells us. They were speaking in foreign language, Tarshish, and Mordechai is the head of the Sanhedrin. He knows all 70 languages. He can hear, understand everything they're saying. And he passes the message on. And she told Ahasuerus in Mordechai's name. And they kill Bigtan and Teresh by Yikasei B'Sefer Divrei HaYom and Lufnei HaMelech. It's noted in the journal of Ahasuerus. And that's how the Perek ends. In a sense, another element of Hashgacha has been put into place, because this favor, unusually, was not repaid at the time, put to the side, forgotten about. It will come back. And as we said, these are the prakim to take the time to see how every piece is being set up. Because when it happens, it will happen very quickly. The actual story of Purim, most of the central prakim, took place over 2 days. And things happened very rapidly at that time. But all of those pieces being set into place, that's what's happening in the earlier prakim. And the more we appreciate the orchestration here, the more we appreciate the measure of Nes itself. We'll leave it there for this evening.